It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Last week, election workers in Lancaster County were remarking 16,000 ballots that couldn't be scanned on election day because of a printer error. This delay could have had big impacts on the race for the GOP nominee for U.S. Senate. Jillian McGoldrick is the Harrisburg Bureau Chief for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Welcome to the Confluence, Jillian.
Thanks for having me.
So 16,000 ballots. What was the error?
Yeah, there was an error with printing all of the ballots. It was the way that they were coded that made them unscannable by the scanners. It was a part of a 22,000 batch of ballots that then had to be, just 16,000 of them were, had this error. So they had to hand copy over every single one of those ballots so that it could be fed through the scanner and be properly counted.
So this was an issue with the company that was contracted to print the ballots?
Yes, yes. And this isn't the first time that they've had it. This mail ballot vendor is NPC Inc. out of Blair County. They specialize in printing mail ballots as well as mailing the mail ballots.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the company being penalized for this error that caused many delays or longer delays in actually scanning and tallying those ballots?
Yes, they've taken full responsibility. Since this has happened to Lancaster County in the past, we can look to what happened with the previous vendor. In the 2021 primary election, about 13,000 ballots had been misproperly coded as well, where they couldn't be scanned and they had to do the same hand copy process so that they could be able to count all of the ballots. That was a mail ballot vendor based out of Michigan. And that company ended up having its contract severed ties with the county. So I'm not saying that is what how they'll be penalized, but that is what Lancaster County has done in the past.
So we don't know just yet what taking full responsibility means.
Yep, we don't. We don't. I know that they were very helpful as soon as the error was realized when they started opening ballots on 7 a.m. on election day, as Pennsylvania election code allows. And when they realized the error, the NPC Inc. was very quick to send over a new batch of ballots so that they could get this process rolling as soon as possible. And because Lancaster was so experienced, sadly, with having to do this hand copy experience, they were able to complete it within 2 days.
Mm-hmm. So the ballots were copied over. I imagine the process was closely watched by representatives of the candidates in such a very, very close contest. I'm speaking specifically about the U.S. Senate GOP nomination.
For sure, yeah. All of this, these groups that were hand copying them over were in teams of three. And there was, as part of this teams of three, one of the people that was a part of the team was just a watcher, where they just watched somebody would read off what each of the ballot, each of the votes were. Somebody would hand copy it. And then the watcher just watched. And then there was members from the Dave McCormick campaign, from the Dr. Mehmet Oz campaign, just circling the room.
So how, you said they had to do this before. So how quickly were they able to remark all those ballots?
They were able to do it within 2 days. So they were really quick this time, but they sadly, the election director there, Krista Miller, told me that she, others joke that she's the expert in remarking ballots at this point, which she said she didn't want that title.
Currently, Mehmet Oz is leading David McCormick by a razor thin margin. When we checked this morning on the Department of State's website, it was fewer than 1,100 votes. Are there any other ballots these candidates are waiting on?
Yeah, so the big one that I know that the Dave McCormick campaign is waiting on is the military and overseas ballots. They say that they had targeted this group. Dave McCormick is a combat veteran, so they believe that they might be able to benefit the most from that. And those ballots aren't are able to be accepted until 5 p.m. on Tuesday. And then there are also still some remaining mail ballots. As of 10 p.m. on Friday, according to the Department of State, there were still about 7,400 Republican mail ballots statewide that still needed to be counted.
And finally, all this could start over again with a recount.
For sure. Yeah. The Associated Press said on Friday they're not going to even call the race. So we really are definitely still in recount territory within that 0.5%. Like they're still within like 0.08%. So this is long from over. We will be going into June here.
Jillian McGoldrick is the Harrisburg Bureau Chief for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thanks, Jillian.
Thanks so much.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. State prisons enacted mitigation measures to stop the spread of COVID-19. More than 2 years later, some of those measures are still in effect despite very high vaccination rates. Danielle Ohl, an investigative reporter with the nonprofit nonpartisan newsroom Spotlight PA, has been covering this issue and joins us now. Welcome back to The Confluence, Danielle.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Danielle, what are some of the mitigation measures still in place?
So one of the biggest things that's perhaps most controversial is in-cell meals. So when the COVID pandemic started back in 2020, the prison system pretty rapidly locked down inmates and, you know, incarcerated people and got rid of congregate meals. So, you know, usually they would walk to a cafeteria setting and have, breakfast, lunch, and dinner that way. Now they are being delivered meals in their cells in most cases, which is controversial because while the prisons argue it could open up more free time for other activities, not having to do, you know, group meals that take a long time. There have been complaints from incarcerated people and their advocates that this furthers isolation. You know, they have fewer socialization opportunities. So that's the big one. Mm-hmm. There are also still restrictions on the ways that in-person visitation works. When the pandemic started, they suspended that. Now it is back, but it is different than it was prior to, 2020.
Okay. Before we get into how it's different, let's go over some of the numbers. How many incarcerated people have died during the pandemic? And also, what percentage of those incarcerated are vaccinated?
So 166 have died during the pandemic, which, one death that is too many, as people say, but it's kind of stunning that it wasn't more, given that Pennsylvania has such a large prison population. And that could be due to the fact that nearly 90% of people who are incarcerated at state prisons are vaccinated. I think this morning I checked and it was it's around 88%. Mm-hmm. And that's fully vaccinated. And there are a few others who are partially vaccinated.
The Wolf administration offered an incentive program which gave those vaccinated $25, which you report can be a significant amount, equaling 130 hours of work at jobs in the prisons that pay 19 cents an hour. But what about the prison staff's vaccination rates?
It is significantly lower. It is less than 50% last I checked. And I will note that this is a self-reported number. So the prison systems can't force staff to give up their medical history, or, they can't force them to say, yes, I'm vaccinated, no, I'm not. But the number that they have is about 49%. So it is significantly lower than the folks who are, incarcerated in the prisons.
But if there is a breakout, that affects both those behind bars and the staffers themselves.
Absolutely, it does. And one of the key complaints from people who are in prison and their advocates and their family members is that they are not going anywhere. They are in prison. They are severely limited in the kind of movement that they do have, even more so after the pandemic, while the staff members come and go. So they have much more exposure. They have a much greater chance of coming in contact with coronavirus and then bringing it back to the prisons.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, Danielle, you mentioned a change in visitation. So how has that changed?
Yeah, so before the pandemic, people could come whenever they wanted. They didn't have to give any kind of notice. After the pandemic, the prison system put into effect these quote-unquote zones, which created restrictions on the groupings of people inside of prisons. Secretary George Little called it a jail within a jail during a budget hearing in front of the legislature. So it's trying to restrict the activity of the people inside, and it has kind of transferred over to visitation. So certain zones are only assigned certain days, and family members might not be able to make it on those days.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's some restrictions on visitations or whether it's the meals in the cell, no dining hall, what are family members, advocates saying, even if you've spoken to some incarcerated, about how restrictions are affecting a feeling of isolation?
Yeah, they do feel a renewed sense, an increased sense of isolation and some sense because they are very highly vaccinated and the rates are so low. There are a couple more new cases since we published our reporting, but it's a really low infection rate. So they are wondering whether, some of these things can be rethought.
Danielle Oh is an investigative reporter with Spotlight PA. Danielle, thanks as always.
Thank you, Kevin. Bye.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. April was the 17th consecutive month where food prices increased. Folks might be feeling this increase at the register. But how is inflation affecting access to healthy foods? With us is Josh Murphy, Director of Supply Chain Strategy at the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Josh, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Grocery prices have risen 11% over the last year. Last time we spoke with the food bank president and CEO Lisa Scales, it was back in November. She told us about how you were spending almost 30% more on food purchases. Is that still the case?
Oh, that's still the case, and in some cases, even higher. Food prices are increasing for the consumer, and they're increasing for us as well. And a lot of things that are driving those food prices increases we're seeing in terms of canned and boxed meals that we would have paid 76 cents a pound for back in 2019, or we're seeing closer to 86 cents a pound. We're seeing fertilizer costs increases driving up the cost of dairy in the coming year, and the cost of grains, and in consequence, pasta that we would have paid 33 cents a pound for last year even is closer to 62 cents a pound at this point.
Josh, we've heard the term supply chain so often during the pandemic. As a director of supply chain strategies, has your role responsibilities changed? Have you had to adapt to all this?
Oh, dramatically. I mean, we created this position just a couple of months ago, really, in response to a lot of the pressure on supply chain. So really, at the beginning of the pandemic, we were seeing sourcing challenges, like things being trapped on shipping containers and in docks, coming over from overseas. Trucking shortages, largely due to the fact that, truck driver salaries have been declining since the early 80s and really just normalizing. So we're seeing a greater cost for transportation, fewer drivers on the road, that sort of thing. But we're also working really hard to shorten the supply chain. Really, the supply chain is everything from when the food comes out of the ground until it goes into somebody's mouth. Right. And we're trying to prioritize fresh foods, meat, fresh produce, fruits and vegetables, and dairy products. And in order to prioritize those in the food bank world, we have to really decrease the amount of time from production until it gets to somebody's plate. So we work really hard on tightening those chains.
So this post, your post was created just because of what has happened in response to what the food bank's been experiencing.
To some extent. I mean, really, the priority of fresh fruits and vegetables becoming up to 50% of our mix, the priority of meat and dairy products, these are the things that people request the most when they come to our food distributions. And these are the things that people have the hardest time buying for themselves and in their communities generally if they're struggling.
Are there some items you just can't really get right now?
Not can't forever, but sure. We're seeing big delays in consumer packaged goods, sometimes shelf-stable milk, sometimes. We've had government commodities. The government buys about a third of our supply generally. We have 300,000 pounds in government commodities that have been canceled this year. So we're buying a lot more food and spending more for it.
So what about your clients? Inflation means rising food prices. I imagine that means more people with limited means, fixed incomes, struggling to afford the same amount of food, correct?
It does, yeah. And we're really seeing increases in attendance at some of our distributions. We have an in-house emergency food pantry that saw 50% higher attendance in March and in April, double what we saw in April 2021. Sorry, that previous number was against 2021 as well. Mm-hmm. And we're hearing from more and more people who come to our food distributions that this is the first time they've sought help, which is something, I haven't seen personally since, at the beginning of the pandemic, but really 2009, the Great Recession, was when we saw a big wave of people who had never sought help before. And it's very challenging if you've never needed help before to actually find it sometimes. So
you're being met with more demand for your services and prices, the cost that you incur going up. Got a bit of a double whammy there. What can you do?
Well, what your listeners can do certainly is help support the food bank by donating time and money. We're working really hard to, again, buy in advance, lock in price points when they're still low. We're buying ahead. We're working on prioritizing. Those fresh, healthy foods are actually the things that are that we can get at the best price point. So really prioritizing fresh produce and things that are not marked up as much and don't have as many inputs in the supply chain, as we say. Mm-hmm. It's really helped.
Yeah, briefly, I mean, what's your plan going forward if inflation doesn't ease and you have continued demand for your services?
Well, we're very lucky to have the support of the community here in Pittsburgh, helping underwrite all of our sourcing activities. But we're going to continue to helping people however we can. And that means optimizing our supply chain and making sure it's cost effective.
Josh Murphy is the Director of Supply Chain Strategy at the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. Josh, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, Pittsburgh Cultural Trust head Kevin McMahon is retiring after 21 years. And we'll have a closer look at the Fern Hollow Bridge before it collapsed. Thanks to our team, Nick Konopka, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.